What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Octagon Control, a very special episode of Octagon Control. As usual, I am your host, Nikolai Gianti. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Chris Manning. And this isn't like a regular show. We've sort of been talking about going through some changes the past few weeks. We're still going to do that, and we obviously have to add more because a very big announcement. Now, anyone in the MMA community knows what ULT MMA is. It's great for the top prospects. They normally do a very good job of covering those prospects. And they are run by sheer dog rider Tommy Masano. And also on the site is DJ San Marco, who I have guest hosted his show a couple of times with him, interviewed Jessica I with him. We've broken down cards before. He is moving to Brazil. He has a job. He will be in Brazil now instead of America. And through the power of the internet, it's still not powerful enough to make it easy to record and get things in a timely fashion, especially when you don't know where you're going to be. So he offered me and asked if I would take over his show. And he really gave me free range about whether or not I just wanted to turn it in to my own show and still do Octagon Control, or just absorb Octagon Control, and it would be the Alt MMA podcast that's featured on the website. I've decided, we've talked, Octagon Control will now go to ultmma.com. So we now get a mainstream audience, which in my opinion I think is massive. And I haven't told Chris about this yet, but generally what happens on his show is it is more than just MMA. He likes to talk food. He likes to talk things like that. I know you're big into music.
That's true.
I think we've heard you talk with guys like Jason High about it before.
Oh, well, you probably thought it was just like a really rude, like, you're just a white dude trying to make friends with me. But
exactly. But I think this does allow us to branch off. I think we can talk about more things. We're going to have a longer time period now. We can go, you know, an hour and a half, no matter however long we want. We can really jump in depth into breaking down cards now. I think it's going to be a blast. This will be our last episode through the Podomatic site. Then you can find us on ultmma.com. And be sure to follow us there. Check out all the articles. And, you know, I think I'm very excited for this. And you know, I obviously think you are too.
Absolutely.
I think this is going to do wonders, but what I think it shows is, at least on our end, one, it's nice always having a connection and someone who respects you. That's huge. But two, we've done this, you and I, without the help of a blog, without the help of a big website, or even, you know, a Bleacher Report, a fan-sided, something like that. We've done this on our own. We've pulled interviews on our own. We pulled Jessica I on our own, Jason High on our own. I pulled Crookshank. We got Mike Richmond a couple times. You know, we've done all this. We've contacted World Series of Fighting and Maximum Fighting on our own. I think that's huge, and I think all the hard work we really put in with that is finally starting to pay off.
I couldn't agree more, and now, instead of just being at a library at our college and just talking randomly and saying, making Nick Diaz jokes, we have an outlet where we can be a little bit more professional, maybe still with the Nick Diaz jokes.
Still with Nick Diaz jokes.
I've got a new Nick. Maybe we'll debut this on our debut episode for Alt MMA, but I found the perfect walkout song for Nick Diaz's return. The perfect walkout song.
I was going to fight for a title, but then I got high.
Oh, it's called, I'll just tell you, it's called Higher by Freddie Gibbs and Danny Brown. And it is a mix of pot smoking and being a gangster. So therefore, it is the Nick Diaz theme song, and I cannot wait to see you listen to this.
Yes, but that should debut next week. I'm still trying to clear things up with DJ. I know he would like to come on, sort of do a passing of the buck episode. So that may just end up being, you know, him and I discussing it, and then we'll jump into the next one, where it's sort of he hands over the reins to me, and then we're all together. But, nice face, I see you just saw Phil Baroni's going to Bellator.
Yeah, dude, what the heck, man? What the heck? Phil Baroni, what is Phil, why?
17 and 18? He's
15 and 17.
15 and 17, sorry.
Give him three, he doesn't deserve me.
Yeah, that's bad. But, yeah, so within the next week or so, We should be to ULTMMA.com. We'll make this official when we put up the show. And hopefully, you know, we can book one of our first guests. I'd say the first thing I've noticed is getting 20 emails of contacts. And, you know, obviously this isn't something where you bombard them. That's just unprofessional. But the fact that I have these contacts now, we have these contacts now to book these guests is going to be huge, no doubt. But let's get to this week's card and last week's card. Not really a ton to talk about last week's card. Gustafsson went up against Jimmy Manoa. I think he gets the next title shot. There's no doubt about that. Barring Glover winning in impressive fashion, I think Gustafsson gets the next title shot in a rematch. Chris, I'm assuming you agree with me there, but what do you then do with DC Daniel Cormier? Is Phil Davis, Rumble Johnson winner the next quote-unquote number one contender fight?
I mean, I think it's the only really logical way to go just because if you think about it, Cormier says he wants to fight. He's seen guys like Rashad Evans lose their title shots by waiting out for a long time. Dana White says he's the next guy, but I mean, he pointed that he's 36 years old. He's not going to benefit and make any money by sitting on the sidelines, so he should fight. No offense to Patrick Cummins, but Daniel Cormier beating him quickly is not for me.
It was expected,
and it's not like Patrick Cummins is a top 10 guy. If he fights the winner of Rumble Johnson and Phil Davis, I think that's enough for me to give him a title shot, assuming he wins that fight. And with Rashad out until the fall with a torn ACL, I think that's really the only way to go with him. I mean, I think Gustafsson Jones is just too much of a perfect fit if Jones beats Glover. And then from there, you just gotta, I think you go DC, and then by the end of the 2014, or early in the 2015, John Jones will have kind of gotten these guys, and we'll get the Cormier Jones thing resolved. But again, I think that's the only logical fight. I can't really think of another 205er that would really make sense to pair him with right now.
No, there really isn't. The other, I think that's a glaring thing. The other fight on the card, you know, Gunnar Nelson came back, got to his winning ways. I still think he could be better at 155. I don't know your thoughts on that.
I do. I mean, when you look at him, I think he has a potential to be a top 10 welterweight even now. His submission game and his grappling just is incredible. But when you look at his body and you say and put him against, let's say for the two guys,
I think a comparable person, and it's sort of based on style at the moment, two karate guys, Lyoto Machida and him. They both carried around, they had sort of that same body type,
but
where they had a little bit of fat, where they could clearly go to the next weight class, but they didn't because they were winning in that higher weight class.
I think there's the difference. For one, I think Machida, I think there's a difference. Machida's striking, I think, in terms of like their styles are different, but Machida's striking was better, while Nelson's is better on the ground. The second thing is, at 205, as much as it's a bigger weight class, Machida was big enough where he could still manipulate the speed. At 170, I really could see a problem when he fights. Let's say, for example, he fought someone.
Tyron Woodley.
Not only that, let's say he was going to fight for a title, and he was going to fight, let's say, out of the three guys that are at the top of his weight class that are fighting this week. Well, even Woodley, you want to throw Woodley in there too, sure. Hendricks, Lawler, Hector Lombard. Gunnar Nelson might be technically more. I think there's potential for him there to actually be more technical than any of those guys. But if Johnny Hendricks tries to just overpower him, I don't know if he could just deal with the brute force and strength of Johnny Hendricks. Lawler hits like a Mack truck, and I don't know if he's strong enough to really stand there. Lombard's a tank. Woodley's a tank. And that's a very cliche way to go about it, but I just don't know if physically he fits there. And I see at 155, he might not be as big as a Benson, but you have leaner guys at the end division. I don't know how much the weight cut would be, how much it changes his game, how much the speed changes, because I think that's definitely a factor. But I think he could have his potential is greater at 155 pounds.
The other fight on there, Brad Pickett obviously went up against a guy on, you know, a few weeks' notice, one that isn't ranked anywhere in the division. I thought he looked all right. You know, he definitely looks a lot skinnier. I do want to see how Brad Pickett, you know, continues with 125. I think he may have leaned out too much. I think there was certainly a possibility for him to carry a little more because there were times where he looked very, very emaciated. He looked good. I think Ian McCall is really going to be the test for him. You know, how does he do? Because there were moments in the Siri fight where, you know, he didn't look great. is that part of just being at 125 for the first time, or, you know, will this continue? But this guy, assuming, you know, if he wins his next, I'd say, two fights, he probably gets the title. He's one of two guys to beat Mighty Mouse. That's a huge deal, even if it was in the higher division.
But here's the point I'll make there. He definitely, the speed for him has not been
trending. No, it didn't, well. And that's the big issue,
not,
I think.
Not only that, like, he beat Demetrius Johnson at, what is probably his ideal weight class. Then you have...
Now, let me say, I don't think he'll beat Ian McCall if they fight.
No, I think McCall would beat him, but let's say he fights Demetrius Johnson. Demetrius he's only finished John Moraga. You know, he's been...
Benavidez.
But... Just in terms of how he fights and how much better he's gotten, then you could make an argument he's a top 3 pound for pound. I have no desire to. Brad Pickett's going to get whooped in that fight. No offense to Brad Pickett, a great veteran of the sport, exciting guy, especially at 135. But the weight cut, the speed difference in his age, it's not an ideal cut. It just looks like it took a lot out.
You've seen me.
I've seen you come into our Jerusalem class and look a little bit, like, lean, but you never look sucked out.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell when it, like...
And you can see, generally, the face is where you see a weight cut. And I may have looked leaner, but you could tell I was still healthy, I was still drinking fluids, I was still not perky, because I'm never perky, but...
You're never, like, chip, chip, cheerio.
Yeah, but I was like certainly... I was handling it well.
Yeah, and just he looked bad. I mean, you can tell when guys look bad. Like, Anthony Johnson had times where he looked awful, like the bags under the eye.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the extreme of it, but, I mean, obviously there's differences in changing. Like, Cormier looked great.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like he did it the right way, and then he feasted on Popeyes.
Which probably wasn't the right way, but hey.
Yeah, but, you know, he made the way, he looked good. But to me, Pickett, it just seemed like it just took a little bit too much out of him.
And maybe that's part of the first time there. But the speed didn't translate like it should have.
No.
And I think there was an argument to be made that that decision wasn't as clear-cut as it could have been, or as it was. I don't think he lost the fight, but he certainly didn't dominate it in any fashion.
No, and the other thing is that with Pickett, if he was really going to establish himself as a contender at 125 right off the bat, Phil Seary was coming in on short notice, you know, not particularly a horrible, great style, much smaller than him. He could have dusted the floor. And I think McCall, especially now them having some heat, I think that's a perfect way to go. And you just kind of, and it's a perfect gauge for both guys in just a sense that you can see what you actually, McCall's just, he hasn't fought. He was very active. He's been very inactive since. You can see if Brett Pickett actually be a title contender.
Yeah.
And if Pickett wins that fight, you probably give him a title.
Well, let's remember this. Ian McCall, if things go his way, fights for the title against Benavidez.
It's such a crazy thing.
It's such a crazy thing. Because he was clearly winning that first fight with Mighty Mouse and had the momentum going into the fourth round. Or what should have been a fourth round. He fought very close with Benavidez, who's really the de facto number two in the division. Maybe with John Dodson. Then, you know, the injuries. He won in Brazil, but he really hasn't. He was supposed to fight Scott Jorgensen. He's just had a lot of issues. This could be a good gauge for him, maybe a nice way to get back on track. He's dealt with some things, for
and
sure.
It'll be actually, if depending on where the fight takes place, particularly if it's stateside on an undercard of a pay-per-view, or maybe like a middle card on a weaker pay-per-view, you could see this fight being the catapult to kind of remind people that Ian McCall is still a good thing, because you could sell a third fight between him.
Oh, easily.
You can, and he's...
He was never thoroughly dominated.
And even just because of how inactive he's been, only fighting, you know, 3 times total in the UFC, two of them against Demetrius Johnson.
Four times. He fought Ilyard Santos.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so but he's fought just a handful of times. He hasn't fought Benavidez. He hasn't fought...
Yeah, yes.
Oh, yeah, McCall, but he hasn't fought Dodson.
Yes.
He hasn't fought... but the Montague fight, I can't forget the Benavidez fight, but the Montague fight, you have a guy who he beat when Montague was technically the number one featherweight in the world, choked him out in a touchy pass fight. You could do that fight. There's just, he hasn't had a big name fight in a long time. I mean, he's still a guy I think you can, if you do the right things with, can be an interesting contender.
And he's got a personality, which is huge for the UFC.
Especially since at 120, I mean, Demetrius is just like, I'm going to keep working and just, you know, keep working, run, have my kids, you know, I'm going to be Mighty Mouse, and you don't really have that. He could be the anti-hero to Demetrius if they kind of play this up right and he can win a couple fights.
Which is funny because if you ever follow anything he does, he's actually like a good guy.
He's a very good guy.
But
With a great backstory.
Oh, no doubt. But it's funny to see that, you know, he could be sort of the villain, and I use that loosely, to Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, I mean, he really could be the guy, you know.
I'm not enough of a nerd to know who Mighty Mouse's supervillain is. We'll have to look that up.
I don't really know, but
new nickname for Ian McCall.
I mean, just the tattooed mustache fellow that wears tight jeans and dates models and the Family Guy.
Yeah,
the Family Guy with a kid who, you know, just clean cut and works hard and just seemingly becomes more like a crazier, better fighter every time.
Yeah, that, you know, there's no doubt about that. But I think we've spent enough time on this card. We definitely need to discuss this card. And first off, you know I am very excited for this. First off, he's got a beard. I mean, that thing's glorious. But Johnny Hendricks is the guy that probably should be the number one, or be the title holder at the moment. Carlos Condit, who doesn't love watching him fight? Tyron Woodley's got, I don't even know what, dynamite in his hands.
It's crazy considering how... It was only 2-3 years ago at this point, which seems forever ago, that he was in Strikeforce.
And finished by Nate Marquardt viciously.
Well, not only that, but before he fought Marquardt, the rep on him was that he was a boring
fight. Yep.
And like they didn't want to book him against Nick Diaz because that wasn't just a sellable fight for them at that point, which I understand. They want Paul Daly, and then he ended up fighting Marquardt, but it's welterweight to me right now, if we were going to kind of rank it in terms of how exciting a division it is, it's probably one or two. I mean, just in terms of how open it is. This is the first time you've had a really open UFC division since maybe post-lightweight BJ Penn.
Yeah.
But even there, I mean, even with
Frankie took the reins real quick.
Yeah, and then it's been muddled by kind of click decisions. But right now, at the top of the division, in the fights this weekend, with Hector Lombard kind of waiting in the wings a little bit, and you have some other names out there, and with G being arguably the greatest UFC champion of all time, kind of lording over this whole thing, you have just potential for dynamite fights and all of these fights. And it's very rare that you kind of get this in a division, especially in the UFC when it's their structure historically has just been dominant champions, ruling division, and at 170. This is the most open this division has been since before Matt Hughes was champion.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
Yeah, I mean,
you really think about that.
This really is. This is the first time we've seen, and everyone loves to throw the word around, but this is the first time we've seen parity in this division in a long time, where anyone could really take hold. You know, Johnny Hendricks, as great as he's been, what happens if that fight with Carlos Condit went an extra two rounds? Are we talking about Carlos Condit in this position now? You know, what happens if Tyron Woodley gets that decision that he probably deserved against Jake Shields?
Well, I mean, he's in the fight.
And I think it becomes a true number one contender fight instead of, well, if Condit wins, he gets it. We aren't so sure about
Woodley. But if Woodley goes out there and beats Condit, there's a few at large things here. There's always the chance, which is very low at this point, where GSP goes, I do want to fight again, and then he immediately probably fights to the belt.
Yeah.
There's also the chance that they go, if Lombard comes out and just smokes Shields, and the winner of Condit Woodley kind of has like a very close iffy performance, they can get Shields, and apparently he wants to fight Michael Bisping, but if they can get Lombard to stay at 170 pounds, you give him the shot, and just, you know, because how hard he hits and how you can sell another knockout fest depending on who wins this fight. Or there's always Rory. I mean, he's not quite. I don't think they'll quite. They could always go the Rory route. There's all these different things out there at play. I think there's already made five round number one contender fights. I think that would. I mean, that's the best gauge.
Yeah.
You could just see if, let's say, Woodley comes out and it just looks better than Condit for three rounds. The first thing anyone will bring up when he fights a five-round fight will be, they'll look, oh, well, he fought Marquardt, got tired. He's gotten tired when he said to go three rounds against guys like Jake Shields. Can he go five rounds? Well, we'd get a better answer to that against a guy like Carlos Condit. And that's kind of what we want out of these fights.
And didn't we have that question with Hendricks before the GSP fight? We saw him kind of slow down in that Condit fight. Arguably it would. And yes, he slowed down. It was the third, fourth round he slowed down.
But it wasn't
glaring.
But also I don't know. It's on Fight Pass, I believe, the Condit Hendricks fight.
Yeah, I've watched it a few times.
You know, I'm gonna watch.
I love that.
That fight was at a torrid pace. I mean, as much as GSP, he's a tactician, and there's all these things you can say about him that make him maybe the greatest fighter of all time, I think there's an argument for that. I would still go Silva, but he isn't a guy who likes to push a crazy pace. Most of his fights are at a very controlled tempo, with not a lot of dynamic action.
And we see what happens when a pace gets pushed for them.
He gets tired.
He's also had some cuts. Look what Condit did. I mean, sure, Condit got beat.
And that was also coming off the layoff. Yeah,
but, I mean, he definitely... Condit's got this thing where he can just push a crazy pace, and he's so good at... We'll break that fight down, because I think we're both going to end up going the same way with it, but it's a great fight. However, do you want to quick pick the fight pass? I think there's a couple good fights on it.
Whatever works.
We'll just quick pick them. So the first one, we got Daniel Pineda goes up against Robert Whiteford. I'm taking Pineda in this fight. Chris, what are your thoughts? Well, who's your pick?
I like Pineda. I think he's flawed as a feather, but fun guy. Got nice submissions. Go with him.
We got Bubba McDaniel, the tough veteran, goes up against Sean Strickland. Strickland's undefeated, 13-0. Bubba McDaniel has these fights where he really makes you scratch your head. I think we saw it on Tough a couple times where he just sort of had a lackluster fight, and I think part of that was Tough. I think he's better than he looked in that show. I got to take him here. I don't think he'll ever be a title contender, but he's certainly an interesting guy in the division.
Yeah, and I think, you know, fighting and coming in late, I think it's got flaws, but he's still got a decent level of ability, and I think he gets it done.
Next fight is Justin Scoggins, Will Campuzano. Campuzano definitely kept it competitive against Sergio Pettis, now drops down to 125 pounds where he had been fighting before that and doing well. Goes against Justin Scoggins, who looked outstanding in his last fight. I got to take Scoggins. But Campuzano's a huge 125er and could definitely make this interesting.
You know, I thought he looked really, really good for the most part against Sergio Pettis.
Yeah.
I like Scoggins. I think he's definitely got some pop. I'm going to go against you here. I'm going to go Campuzano. I think he's got good striking. He's got some ability. Let's see how he looks against a guy who is in his titles of a prospect, Sergio Pettis, and I'll go with him.
Next up, we got Francisco Trevino goes up against Henny Forte. Chris, I'll let you take this one first.
Henny Forch, I believe is how you pronounce Henny, it.
Yeah, Forch, you're right.
I'm going to go for Henny Forch. I'm not particularly, don't know a ton about the guy, but I have Fornitina Henny. He looks solid. I think he gets really good. I want to say he gets a finish.
Yeah, I'm going to go and agree with you with Forch. He's coming off a loss, but John McDessie's looked very good in his last few fights, so there's really no shame. He defeated Terry Adam previously to that. I'm going to take him here, but it certainly could go, a different route with a guy that is relatively unknown from, a lot of UFC guys and Francisco Trevino. Now, to the Fox Sports 2 prelims, just to make sure, because I was thinking Fox Sports 1, and I would have had to scold our waitress at B-Dubs had she not put the fights on. Just kidding. I love all our waitresses at B-Dubs. They're very kind, and they don't try to throw us out early. But...
we'd sit there and don't eat food.
Exactly. But the prelims this week, Fox Sports 2, not Fox Sports 1, so make sure you understand that. First fight, we got Sean Spencer, Alex Garcia. I know neither of these guys are making their UFC debut that much. Ooh, this is interesting. Spencer is on a 2-fight winning streak. And just because Chris doesn't like to help me out and look at our fighter stats. No, Alex Garcia is coming off that, I remember this, the knockout victory over Ben Wall. Looked good there, that's for sure.
Is it, you know what, I want to just ask you, it's kind of crazy that I'm thinking, looking at some of these guys, and it's just like, I know they fought the UFC, but it's getting harder and harder to know literally every guy in this roster. I feel like 2 years ago when we started doing it, like a year ago.
Oh, it was easy. And part of it is the Fox thing, and part of it is the expanding the market thing, yet then they're cutting more and more fight. It's a very confusing issue. But I'm going with Alex Garcia here. I think he's got knockout power. I think he's a big, strong, physical guy, and I think that's going to be his advantage here.
I'd like to put a star on Sean Spencer, but I do agree. I think Garcia, to me, reminded me a little bit, was kind of Lombard-ish in his fight style.
He looks similar.
Yeah, he looks similar. He hits really hard. Actually, he has a loss to Pazinski, of all things, but I think Spencer is a decent prospect, but he doesn't really have a lot of pop, and I think he's... He's probably going to get the finish in this fight.
Next fight. And you know how much I love this guy.
Just pick it.
Dennis Bermudez. But in all seriousness, Hedes is going to try to use his judo to get the advantage. I think Bermudez is going to be able to stuff it with his wrestling. I think we saw in the Matt Grimes fight that his stand-up is getting better. He got caught a few times, but when he used head movement, very good with the stand-up. I still think he can do something. Maybe not go as high as I once thought in this division, but I think, first off, I like what the UFC is doing with him. They're taking him slowly and moving him up. And I think that may have benefited Diego Brandão, the guy that actually won the Ultimate Fighter. I think they took him up a little quick. They put him against, a guy like Dustin Poirier. I like what Brandão, sort of what's been going on with him. I think he gets the win here. And then I think he might get a definitely a bigger name opponent. Maybe not a top 10 guy. They might give him one more, 11 to 15 and then give him. But I certainly like the way that the UFC is moving along.
I do, too. And I like Jimmy Hedes. The hype train around Hedes has been kind of derailed. He beat Alex Caceres in his first fight. Beat my boy Fam, but he lost to Brivage. He's coming off his first win. He's been kind of inactive relatively. I just don't see how he wins this fight. I think Bermudez takes him down repeatedly and just controls the pace. Hedes is sneaky off his back, but I think Bermudez has shown good enough posture and ability to defend.
He's big, strong.
And it's not like, it's not going to be like the Brandão fight where I think Brandão was really slick.
Right.
Maybe got it a little
hazy. And that was rushing in early after knocking a guy down.
Yeah, and so, that's kind of excusable, but I think Bermudez gets it done, provided he can provide. I think really where this fight comes down to is who's just going to be able to land the takedowns.
Yeah, that really is it. Moving on, we got Raquel Pennington, who's stepping up for, I can't believe I forgot. Help me out. Blew out her knee, won the Ultimate Fighter.
Juliana Pena.
Okay, stepping in for Juliana Pena, Raquel Pennington goes against Jessica Andrade. I like Raquel Pennington. I think she's a fun fighter. She's certainly someone that's going to go in there and go balls to the wall. Criticize my simile if you want, but Jessica Andrade just looked so good in her last fight. And I know it was against Rosie Sexton. And Sexton's certainly an undersized 35er, but I just think there's a big difference between, Jessica Andrade going up against Liz Carmouche and Jessica Andrade going up against Raquel Pennington. I was more interested when this was Juliana Pena. I'm going with Jessica Andrade here.
I would say she's a huge 135 pounder.
And that's a compliment.
We'll just move on from this, so it's an awkward, but she's clearly not. She got totally outclassed by Liz Carmouche, but she's got just the ability to kind of control people. I think she gets this done, and let's kind of see. Maybe we give her someone a little bit higher up and just kind of see what happens.
There's definitely some interesting fights, and what I like about the women's division is I think we're still at a point where we can pair winning people coming off a win off guys coming off a loss. Right. Now, the main event of the Fox Sports 2 prelims, Kelvin Gastelum, Rick Story. Chris, I'm going to let you take this one first.
This is for me, probably the hardest fight on the card to call, just because I can see this really going two ways, and I really think it just comes down to who gets the wrestling. As much as I really, really like Kelvin Gastelum, we just don't know enough about him yet to kind of know where he's at. You know you're going to get Rick Story. He's going to be very aggressive. He's going to try to take you down, and he's going to try to bulldoze you. It's very predictable. Gastelum, I think, has probably got the higher ceiling. I tend to think he might have a slight edge in wrestling, but I don't know. I'm going to go Kelvin Gastelum. I'm not convinced. I really think this is a very pick-em fight, but I've seen Story fade. I've seen Story struggle against guys who are crafty and have a little bit of diversity in the way to defend him, or can kind of get him on his heels. Like, I think Thiago Alves at times got it. Thiago Alves lost that fight against him, no doubt, but when he had Story on his heels, it was a closer fight. If Gastelum's best chance here is to be very creative in his wrestling, to get takedowns on Story, and when he's on the ground, to try to do what Mike Pyle did and kind of create separation and go for things when he can, I think Gastelum's going to win this fight, but again, I think this is the hardest fight on the
hard to pick.
Yeah, I have to agree with you that this is the hardest fight to pick. I looked at this, and I've sort of thought about it and gone back and forth a few times. I think what you pointed out perfectly is, first off, I think we've seen Rick Story get taken down before, which I think says something. He does. We've seen him gas, and we've seen guys have success off their back against him like Mike Pyle. I think Gastelum's going to be able to get the wrestling. I think his stand-up's ever improving, and I think he's going to come in there very strong. There's no doubt about that. I think we always see that with these Dolce guys. It really depends on who does get the takedowns, but I just think Gastelum's going to have the better gas tank, and I think that's going to push him, and I think he ekes out a decision. But this is definitely a tough fight to call.
Yeah, I think this is an absolute underrated fight of the night.
Now, moving on to the main card, first fight. Ovince St. Preux goes up against Nikita Krylov. Krylov stepping in on short notice because of the whole Thiago Silva issue. Silva's got pulled off the card and out of the UFC. But OSP, you know, he's looked very good. And Krylov, while he looked good against Walt Harris, that's Walt Harris. That's not, you know, one of these guys. I think Krylov's going to look better at 205, but I don't think there's a point where he can beat Ovince St. Preux, and I'm taking St. Preux in this most likely by finish.
Yeah, I would agree. OSP can be very technically inept sometimes and prone to some odd things, but Krylov isn't anything special. It's a good move to go to 205 for him, but St. Preux is going to clock him, and it's going to be this is a weird fight to have in the main card.
I liked it better when it was Thiago Silva, because Silva was never going to be a title contender, but he was always an interesting fighter.
And you probably said something about OSP.
Yeah. Moving on, a fight, really the first of the three sort of contender, or two contender in one title fight, when it comes to the welterweight division. We have Jake Shields, Hector Lombard. Jake Shields, first off, as boring as he can be, and he can be unbelievably boring. The guy can grind out wins. His stand-up is hideous. It is bad. And he's going to rely on that takedown a ton in this fight. But what we've seen from Hector Lombard is outstanding takedown defense in his whole career. And he's so low to the ground, it's going to be very difficult for Shields to get under him, get under his balance and his posture and his hips, and get those takedowns. I think Lombard's explosive. He's even more explosive at 170 pounds. The guy's got lightning in his hands, excuse the pun. I'm taking Hector Lombard. I don't know if he finishes it, but there's certainly a possibility here. I am going to say he does finish it.
Yeah, I do too. My biggest issue with this fight for Shields is that his striking is efficient, but it's just not very good. He also has only had two of his last 25 takedowns. His best chance to win this fight is to put Lombard on his back, and historically guys have trouble doing that. I think an elite wrestler in this division can, but I don't think Shields is an elite offensive wrestler. He's better when he can kind of trap you and kind of falling and then using his top game. As a result, I think Lombard's probably going to just kind of control this fight. Could end up being really boring. There's going to be an extreme in this fight. It's either going to be an extreme for Lombard or extreme for Shields. And then I think Lombard wins this out. I think he probably finishes this within a few rounds.
Moving on, next fight on the card, we got Diego Sanchez goes against Miles Jury. Sanchez claims he's going to fight smarter. I do want to see that.
He's also got he's on his like Vitor Belfort progression scale because this is what's happened.
Does he have a mohawk right now?
He's got a mohawk.
Okay. Yeah.
And not only that, but he's fully more believing in Jesus, in the Lord Jesus Christ, his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He's proclaiming it, saying that he is in tune with God. He's clearly on the Vitor Belfort without the TRT.
And I'm a religious guy, but some of these guys. First off, Vitor Belfort's insane.
Let's just avoid this.
Diego Sanchez is just as insane, if not more. But I love the guy because he runs out saying yes all the time. And the guy, first off, you can tell a lot of fighters that they're losing two rounds, and they may try to finish and make it look like they're more aggressive. Diego Sanchez is one guy that's going to bite down on his mouthpiece and swing. And I love that about him. Now, I think Diego Sanchez still has a pace that is better than a lot of guys. I think he is going to resort back to his wrestling a little bit. I think he got a real rude awakening when his coach told him his footwork sucked. I mean, that's a tough thing to hear. Not that you need to improve it, that yours just straight out sucked. I think he's going to fight smarter. I think he'll utilize his takedowns. But I don't think he's going to be afraid to push the pace. I'm taking Diego Sanchez in this fight.
I am too. I really think Jury has an interesting skill set to beat him. His wrestling's pretty solid. He's lengthy. He fights very smart and calculated, but also has some pop in his punches. But if he isn't ready, if he isn't mentally ready to handle what Diego kind of brings to the cage, and it psychs him out, he's done before he even gets in the cage. At 32, you got to think Diego's going to be slowing down at some point.
Especially with the, I mean, he's been in some wars. He's Shogun 32. He's not like Dan Henderson 32 or Randy Couture 32.
Yeah. I think Diego gets it done. It's going to be slow. This fight's going to be very sloppy. In terms of, I just think it's going to be a little sloppy at times, like a lot of Diego fights do. Especially if he's pulling the trigger like he did against Gil. Give me Diego, give him by unanimous decision.
Moving on, co-main event: Carlos Condit, Tyron Woodley. This could easily be fight of the night. There's no doubt about that. And we've sort of talked about it earlier. Tyron Woodley, outstanding wrestling. Carlos Condit, we've seen traditionally, has had some issues with wrestlers. He's been taken down before. But he is so good off his back, and his guard is so active with elbows and submission attempts and everything. He's got such a diverse striking game, and he's a very long fighter at 170 pounds. I think those two losses in a row to Johnny Hendricks and GSP really changed him. I think he's gone back and really worked on his takedown defense. I think that Woodley is going to have trouble getting inside and is going to have trouble, you know, getting the takedowns. And if he does, I think Condit will be active enough off his back to get up or hit some sweeps. Now, what scares me about Carlos Condit is the fact that he is traditionally a slow starter. We even saw it in the Campman fight. It took the first round for him to get ready and get going. I think he's going to be a quicker starter in this fight. I think he's going to win it, but I would like it more. Were it five rounds, I would feel more comfortable picking Carlos Condit, but I think he wins, and I think he gets the next title shot.
I do, too. I don't think he finishes Woodley unless it's by submission, but I think Woodley's going to struggle with the length, but I think Woodley is just the I think Woodley's probably going to get the first round, and I think the second round is going to be the key, because I think Condit's going to take over somewhere through that round. But what is Woodley going to do, and what is the game plan going to be? Is he going to try to strike? I think his best bet is on just go to the wrestling.
It has to be.
And just go for a lot of ground pound and try to inflict damage and slow Condit down. But I think Condit's crafty enough and has the right skill set to beat Woodley. It's a bad styles matchup for him. There's other guys that he could fight that are in this rough spot in the division, but I think he gets it done. And if he doesn't get a title shot, Rory and him for
it really is.
I think it's like it's one of those two things. I mean, depending on who really does get the shot, it's either gotta go him and Rory or you give Condit Carlos the title shot.
That's true. Moving on. Main event now, Johnny Hendricks, Robbie Lawler. All of this fight, you know, both these guys could finish each other at any point. And you've read the article really breaking down the four keys for Hendricks to win. I think for me it's he's got to fight like he did against Carlos Condit. He's got to utilize that wrestling. We've seen Lawler get taken down before. There's no doubt about that. Hendricks is a four-time All-American, two-time, you know, national champion at Oklahoma State. He's got outstanding wrestling. His stand-up is ever-improving, and I think his gas tank's improving. It's been a long time since Robbie Lawler's gone five rounds. You know, this is a huge step-up in competition. Rory McDonald, you know, he sort of looked iffy in his last few fights. This is a big step-up. Robbie Lawler definitely deserves this, but I just don't think there's enough ways for him to win. He could certainly finish it, but I think Johnny Hendricks is going to fight smart this time. And he fought smart in the last one, but he, you know, obviously didn't get the decision. I think he's going to utilize his wrestling. I think he's going to work on some striking. But I think he's really just going to control the pace, control the where this fight is. And I think he wins a decision here.
I do too. This fight really could end at any time. I want to see where it takes place. I want to see who's controlling the pace of the fight. Because if it's more methodical, I think that's going to favor Robbie. Well, think about it. I think that favors Johnny if it's more methodical, because that means it's going to be more wrestling. And if it's a little bit more kind of free-flowing, kind of just throwing bombs, that definitely favors Robbie. What does the UFC say the difference in reach is?
The difference in reach, and I'm trying to... Unbelievable, UFC. You got everything but the reach. That's, thank God we have Google. Let me tell you that much. You know, that really is going to be an interesting thing. Now, Robbie Lawler's reach is 74 inches. I know Johnny Hendricks is, it might be like 69, 71. So yeah. 3-inch reach difference, really 1.5.
Yeah, so that's, and then you have the, well, Robbie's only 5'11", Hendricks is about 5'9", so it's not like a huge difference. Robbie isn't much of a kicker anyway.
No, so that doesn't really.
So Robbie just seems bigger to me. In terms of his size, like, he seems just like a bigger guy, though, because he used to fight a middleweight.
But Hendricks walks around at about 220.
I know, but I think of, like, I just think of, like, the presence, and I think, well, Lawler's bigger, whatever. But I'm going to go Hendricks. I think Hendricks gets the belt. I think he won back a few months back. I think he gets it by decision, but I think there's a very real possibility that one of them just knocks the other one out cold before that final bell rings.
Definitely. Well, that wraps up our final episode on at least OctagonControl.podomatic.com. We will move to ULTMMA.com. Thank you, Tommy Masano. Thank you, DJ San Marco, everyone at ULTMMA. We'll definitely make you proud. We'll definitely carry on what you guys have, and we hope to have you on the show multiple times, you know, just to break everything down, have sort of a round table if we can, too. We'll be back next week. You can check Chris out on Twitter, at CWMWrites. Check myself out at Nikolai_Gianti. You can check his writing out right down euclid.com. Check mine at MaximumFighting.com. My views on this are not affiliated with those views, and they aren't their views. They are my own. We'll see you next week. Fights this week. I can't wait.